Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia.
And today we're discussing Whatever It Takes, the third episode of Season 2 of the X-Men animated series.
Yes, a really cool episode by none other than Julia Leewald, who we...
Wait, who's Julia Leewald?
I was about to say.
Oh.
we had the pleasure of speaking with, along with her husband, Eric Leewald, a few episodes ago. So if you missed that one... Look back in the podcast history and check that one out.
That's a can't-miss episode.
Yeah, they're two of the writers for X-Men, the animated series, and it was a real pleasure to speak with them and now to talk about this episode that she wrote as well, which was a really, really cool one.
You're not just kissing her butt.
Well, we're done talking to her, so I don't need to kiss her butt.
Well, we might talk to her in the future again. They were very nice.
Anyway.
They were very congenial towards us for no reason.
Well, okay. Well, bias aside, I really liked this episode a lot. I thought it was full of, like, suspense and it was really, like, riveting in a lot of ways. The X-Men go traveling to South America and Antarctica and Africa.
Oh, my God. And they start in New York.
A four-continent episode.
Wow. What do you know? The four corners of the globe, you might say.
You might.
Is that the expression, four corners of the globe?
The four corners of the earth?
Yeah.
I think they mean north, south, east, west.
But right? That's the expression, though, right?
Maybe.
I've traveled to the four corners of the earth.
Is that like an expression that comes from when people thought the earth was flat?
Or does it just mean that, like, because everyone looks... I mean, not everyone. Some people use a globe, but, you know, most pictures of the earth as a map are flat.
Uh-huh.
So, if it's flat, it's a rectangle.
Uh-huh.
So, therefore, you would go to the four corners.
Which means that the four places I just mentioned are not the four corners.
Well...
Depending how you slice your map,
well, the earth is a sphere anyway, so...
Yeah, but I'm saying at some point people didn't know that.
I don't know.
Who knows where they thought the four corners were.
Someone enlighten us on what the four corners of the earth are and if we should visit them. So, I mean, this episode primarily takes place in Africa, in and around Mount Kilimanjaro, Tanzania, more specifically, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where most of the action is. And it opens on a young mutant who we haven't met before, and I believe was purposely created for the series. Again, if I'm wrong, please correct us in the Facebook group. his name is Mishnari, and he's just a cool, local African youth of the Mount Kilimanjaro region wearing a Michael Jordan jersey.
That's why you called him cool, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty apropos of the time when the show was made. I mean, Michael Jordan was the greatest, most popular athlete in the world in the 90s, and he's still up there to this day, obviously. So that's pretty an interesting sort of nice little modern touch reference there.
Yeah.
And so this kid, Mishnari, he has the powers of super speed, similar to our friends Quicksilver.
The Flash.
The Flash of a different comic universe.
Yeah.
And others. Superman, I guess.
Right.
People who could run really fast. So he's got those lightning quick powers. Mm-hmm. He shows them off with his friends playing some soccer. His friends don't seem to mind that he's a mutant, which is nice. That's an interesting type. Like, no one in the village cares that Mishnari is a mutant. He's not getting any guff.
Right. Well, it seems like there aren't any other mutants there, so maybe, like, the prejudices and stuff of the rest of the world don't, like, permeate.
Or perhaps, well, it's the village Storm emerged from young adulthood, and she was quite the popular figure in this village.
Right.
So maybe if they had any problems with mutants, they got over it when Storm came by and was really helpful to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we'll get into that more and more. Essentially, what's going on in this episode is Jean Grey in New York... in Westchester, so upstate New York, detects something going on in Africa. She says there's a tear in the psychic or astral plane, and Beast speculates that it's because of all of Bishop's time traveling, that there's some kind of consequence to him messing with the space-time continuum, that now the astral plane is ruptured. So, Sonia, can you enlighten our listeners and just tell us what the astral plane is? You're really good at yoga. You should know what that
is. Well,
those go hand in hand, right?
Yeah, they're exactly the same thing when you do yoga, you go to the astral plane. Didn't you know that?
No, I did not know that. Yeah. Well, anyway.
Well, for the listeners out there that have been also following the series Legion on TV recently.
On FX.
You'd think that was like a plug for...
You don't know they sponsor this podcast?
What?
They send us big checks.
I did not know that. Good to find that out. They also touch on the astral plane, well, actually use it quite extensively in in the series. So essentially it's like...
Oh, it's also something that's big on in the Doctor Strange movie and universe, comic universe.
My understanding is that it's like some alternate dimension. It's like a physical space, but like not within our like three-dimensional world.
Right. It's like one of the other dimensions.
Right.
And, you know, I think most of our listeners have a rough idea what the astral plane is. I just wanted to hear you try to describe it. The astral
plane. Just wanted to watch me stutter.
Yeah, it's just like it's like a psychic dream world that goes back in various mythologies. I don't think it's something. It's definitely not something created in the comic book universe.
Yeah, right.
This is something that goes back in human mythology.
Right.
In various practices. I don't want to ascribe it to any religion or anything. But basically, you know, there's actually people who believe it's real.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, maybe the, and this is me completely talking out of my own ass here, but like something with like when you're dreaming and the dream dimension, and that people think you can like access this astral plane and float above your body and explore the universe.
Taking certain like potent.
Well, it's not just drug related.
It's not just drug related, but that's like one of the branches.
Right. It's a psychedelic like exploration of the realms of consciousness, let's say.
Right. I mean, it's a super interesting topic, and I think it's like really cool that Marvel taps into things like that like
that bleed
part
between...
of like certain mythologies and like I don't know.
Well, they in a universe where psychics are real, perhaps the astral plane is too, kind of thing.
Right,
But the astral plane is like, you've heard of the astral plane, you know, like that's what Marvel's conceit is, that like...
Right. Except that it's like a show for little kids, so they haven't heard of the astral plane, maybe, but like, here's your introduction to the astral plane.
Right, I know, I mean, it comes from the comics. Right, exactly, which is awesome, right? Yeah. I mean, I was very fascinated with this astral plane business when I saw this episode.
Yeah, sure, because especially when you're a kid and you learn that like 2D exists and 3D exists, and then you're like, wait, 4D is time? And then your mind gets blown, and then you're like, maybe there are 126 other dimensions,
No, there's only 11 dimensions.
Who knows? But anyways, Mijnari also has this other power that he can see like the rupture of the astral plane, which everybody else can't see.
Mount Kilimanjaro.
Right.
And he's kind of the only one who can see the Shadow King, dun dun dun, who's the main villain of this episode.
Right.
So, and this ties hand in hand with our mention of the show Legion, because in that show, which if you haven't seen, by the way, you should really get to binging, especially if you're an X-Men fan.
Yeah.
It's about this mutant character named Legion, who is Xavier's son.
He's named Legion?
That's like his mutant like code name. It's not really explicitly said.
About it.
Yeah, I mean the show takes like the tact of. I'd say that's the one realistic element of the show, that they don't like say I'm Legion and the other guy's like I'm Colossus or not. You know, they're just normal characters. His name is David.
Right.
So, but the show is extremely surreal. Uh-huh. But anyway, that show, the main villain is the Shadow King as well.
Right.
And the Shadow King...
It's really creepy in the show.
Yeah.
They do it really well.
Yeah, and that character is referred to as the Shadow King.
Yeah, don't watch it with kids.
Right.
It's not for kids.
And I have to go there, spoilers, in the show, when they're discussing the Shadow King's origin, they hint at Xavier being David's father.
Right.
Which is something that people who were fans of the show didn't know if they'd get into, because they didn't know if they're going to cross into like the more mainstream X-Men continuity, if it was just going to be a totally far-flung, like separate thing.
Right.
You know, just where they'd be talking about mutants and that's it.
Right.
But that was a cool moment. And in this episode, we get some more discussion of that as well. And then I would say if you're a fan of Legion, this is extremely relevant watching.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're interested in the Shadow King and getting, like, a deeper connection into who that is. Because they do a pretty good job, like, summarizing him. You know, essentially, the Shadow King, as we learned in this episode, was a again, we're going to need the X-Men Facebook group to clarify here, and we're going to talk about them more in a few minutes, but the Shadow King, from what I understand, is like a being of the astral plane, mm-hmm. or like a sort of an evil psychic force that has come to Earth, and he's inhabited this... The whole story is he inhabited some Middle Eastern character from Egypt named Farouk, or that was his last name. And there's a lot going on there. I don't think the Shadow King is a mutant itself. It might be like some kind of like parasite of the psychic realm.
Right.
Something, some kind of malevolent force.
Right. But I just love how the Shadow King enters, and we get a little bit of this backstory from Storm and Rogue talking about it. But we haven't actually met him before in that animated series. We have had like zero reference to him before this mm-hmm. episode. But the way they talk about the events that happened before, it's like, it's not direct exposition, it's not like a purposeful, it doesn't feel purposeful in that way, but it does leave you with this extra feeling of reality. It's like the world is whole because mm-hmm. there's this whole backstory that happened.
It's similar to our introduction of the Juggernaut, where when he's introduced in the first season, the characters just know who he is. Mm-hmm. Jubilee's the only one who doesn't. So in this episode, it's similar in a way that Rogue and Storm fully know who the Shadow King is. They know what the history he has with the X-Men, with Professor Xavier, mm-hmm. and they know how dangerous he is.
Right.
And it's actually weird that Jean doesn't come on this mission. You would think as the resident psychic with Professor X missing, that Jean would fly to Africa. I'm not sure why only Storm and Rogue go.
I'm not sure either, but I really like them as a pair of superheroes go, because they can both fly and mm-hmm. like they're both like super strong and like they just show up and
when they show up to show up to Mijinari's village. It's on fire, and Storm creates like a rainstorm, and Rogue saves some cows from a wall collapsing on them.
It's really hilarious. She's talking to the cows. She's like, "There you go, boys, girls."
And it's just like
that.
There's just something cool, like if you're visiting like beautiful scenic Africa, to just fly around and get that perspective.
Yeah,
that's like a nice little fantasy. But anyway, the Shadow King, and in talking about Storm's backstory, we learned that Storm was an orphan, which was kind of hinted at before in season one. But here we see that...
We actually don't learn that here, necessarily.
Well, it's mentioned.
If you...
It's mentioned that she's an orphan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did I just miss that?
No, it's very quickly said.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's kind of mentioned she's an orphan, and she winds up in this village, and she becomes, like, a popular figure in this village. And so the backstory here with Storm is that she had a friend in the village, I believe named Shawnee, who... was giving birth, and the childbirth went bad. Shawnee got, you know, she got hurt, and so Storm saved the baby's life
mm-hmm.
in a way, and she also helped raise the child while the mother was recovering. And you know, it turned out that the child's a mutant. I don't think Storm saving the child's life had anything to do with Mijinari becoming a mutant. But anyway, Storm was a beloved figure in this village.
Right.
So that's some good Storm backstory.
Yeah.
And
is really great, because we don't get too much backstory on Storm before that. We see that, like, the reason that she's claustrophobic as a child, and like that's about it. So it's like nice that the story is like caught up with her and like come back around.
I get the point. I was circling around to that I just remembered.
Oh, yeah.
Was that the key part of that backstory is that Storm was driven to this village by the Shadow King,
right?
Because
she
was like an orphan who was like a street orphan.
That's right.
Right, and
I forgot we were going somewhere.
and that has a lot to do with Storm's comic book history as a child, which I'm pretty well aware of, where Storm was like this child thief, which you see in the X-Men Apocalypse movie, and the Shadow King was like her, like when the Shadow King was possessing some other dude, I think the Farouk persona, whatever mm-hmm. that was, the Shadow King was controlling children, and Storm was among them, and Professor X, you know, battled the Shadow King and saved Storm, and Gambit was there. Like, X-Men Task Facebook group members, please fill us in.
If you know more than we do.
Yeah,
which
do. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I used to know all this in precise detail, but the rivers of time have eroded these details. I still have a lot of inane Simpsons trivia in my brain, but X-Men backstory is a little more foggy. Anyway, so that's the story with the Shadow King. And so, and like you said, it's cool that it, the Shadow King's this established entity in the minds of our main character friends.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, and so essentially what's going on in this episode, it's your basic Shadow King premise. He, his number one bad guy thing is to possess people.
Right.
And sort of use their bodies for his own, you know, what have you. And right. So he's been free. So we've learned that Professor X trapped him in the astral plane in a mountain, in Mount Kilimanjaro.
Right, when they last encountered each other.
Right.
But... Well, it's not that the astral plane was in Mount Kilimanjaro. It's that the opening is now in Mount Kilimanjaro.
Right, yes.
Right, so, and that's how he escapes and he possesses Mijinari. So yeah. That's, so then...
And it's all planned to draw out Storm. The Shadow King wants revenge on Storm. Because
right.
Storm's a way more powerful mutant. And the Shadow King's plans for getting revenge on both Storm and Xavier involves possessing Storm.
Right.
With her godlike abilities.
Right. So he succeeds in luring her out. Her and Rogue show up. And, you know, of course, Storm is willing to make the trade. Like, right. She'll sacrifice herself to save Mijinari if she can.
All right. And so let's put a pin on that.
Yep.
So what else? The other thing going on this episode is we have the adventures of Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
He is in a different sort of tropical part of the Earth. He's in Brazil, the upper Amazon,
mm-hmm.
and he's on the trail of Morph, who, if we remember from the last episode, Morph kind of helped save the X-Men in the end from the clutches of Mr. Sinister, and he escaped into the jungle, and Wolverine vowed to rescue Morph, or to help his rehabilitation, because Morph was the only one who could make Wolverine laugh, and if there's only one person in the world who can make you laugh, you do not want that guy lost in the
that's
wind.
Right.
So Wolverine's out like on his mercy mission. It's also, you know, Wolverine sort of fleshes out his character a little bit more, which he's talked about before, in that he's himself had severe psychic trauma mm-hmm. in his life that the professor helped him with, and Wolverine wants to do the same for Morph.
Right.
So
I don't know if that's a fleshing out so much as a reminder.
Right, yeah,
something.
Probably, you're right, more but of a reminder.
Anyway.
So, you know, Wolverine's on Morph's trail, he smells around South America for him, and he eventually finds him in a bar. Another mutant-friendly bar, by the way. So when Wolverine comes across this little, like, you know, jungle village bar, there's a ruckus going on inside, and a bunch of, you know, disgruntled mutants are walking out.
Mm-hmm.
And the ruckus is being caused by Morph, who's in the guise of some, like Australian outback man.
Right, he's the barkeep at this bar.
Or something.
Or just pretending to be.
I don't know. And Wolverine says, "You're coming with me one way or another." Sort of like threatening him. Like, yeah. He's supposed to be your friend.
Your Wolverine impression sounds a little more piratey.
Yeah, that wasn't as good. Sometimes I can do it. Sometimes my throat just hurts too much. But I love Morph's reply to Wolverine here. Because, you know, Wolverine is, like, really dramatic about this. And
yeah.
Morph's like, "Why? So we could go bowling?" And it's just kind of like, yeah, like, Wolverine, like, just let him be. I mean,
it's actually a fair point, because whenever we see, like, the X-Men on their leisure days, they are really in their, like, casual 80s wear, like, with sunglasses, you know, sipping an ice cream soda or something.
Enjoying,
like,
Professor X's money.
Right.
I didn't even want to – I briefly noticed this, that Wolverine is exploring South America in his L.O.B. main outfit.
that's his uniform.
Well, yeah, you know, like...
His alternate uniform.
His fur jacket and buttoned-up, like, plaid shirt and boots and pants.
Gotta it seems keep a little, safe from those mosquitoes.
It seems a little warm for South America.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I wonder if his healing factor keeps his body, like, at a nice, like, nice cool temperature at all times. He's also immune to, like, being sweaty. I'm just throwing
Based
that out
on
there
the movies,
too.
No,
right? He does get sweaty in the movies.
Yeah,
yeah. But anyway, so they start to fight a little bit, and Morph gets the upper hand when he turns into Jean and starts taunting Wolverine about, you know, his forlorn love for Jean Grey,
right?
And he really sticks a dagger in Wolverine's emotional center,
mm-hmm.
which. It's kind of stunning to see Wolverine get rattled by that, because it's like he knows he's fighting Morph.
Right. There's no way Jean's going to be there. It's not like it's really a trick.
Yeah, but Wolverine is tricked. But then,
well, even if his brain is not tricked, his heart is tricked,
right.
or something.
But it's cool, because that's like another moment where it seemed like that's weird of Wolverine to, like, be fooled that easily. But then when he confronts Morph again, Wolverine comments on it. He's like, I got mad, whatever, I'm over it now. Yeah. And it's like, yeah. I like that kind of turn. You know, the characters, they have some like emotional damage, yeah. But they're aware of them. You know, they're working on their right. problems. You know? They're going through a process.
Yeah, right. All right. It's all thanks to Professor X's psychotherapy treatments and their dreams or whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so, you know, and we're jumping around a little bit, but Wolverine...
Well, the show jumps around a little
yeah,
bit,
Yeah, the show
too,
jumps but... around, but I want to focus on Wolverine. So Wolverine's tracking Morph into the jungle. He falls down a mineshaft. He finds Morph again, and Morph transforms into several cameo characters again. We see him transform into Omega Red.
Deadpool.
And to Deadpool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And this is Deadpool's second appearance on the show, mm-hmm. and it won't be his last. But Deadpool keeps coming in these cool little cameos. And I just love how the artists...
Your eyeballs are so wide right now.
Well, I just love how they're just throwing in Deadpool references without ever explaining it. And in the show, Deadpool never gets a real moment. I mean, he's just always is like yeah. some kind of like trick, like you know, entry into our. In, what am I trying to say? He just shows up like either in like a psychic dream or in yeah. someone's memory.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like a little nugget for people who know who Deadpool is. Yeah. It's like, wow, that's so cool. But if you don't know who Deadpool is, it doesn't even matter.
But I just wonder. But the reason I'm interested in this is because I'm wondering what was Deadpool's popularity in the mid to early 90s. He wasn't like a pop culture icon like he kind of is becoming today.
Well, only because of the movie.
I know, but that's what I mean. Like, yes. Back then, Deadpool's relatively new character. I was never a Deadpool fan at that time or ever in the comics.
No, I wasn't aware of him at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was aware of, like, what he looked like, so I probably could recognize him in the show. But I'm just wondering, like, what Deadpool's, like, popularity was. But it's just cool that they keep showing him.
Yeah.
So, and then they start fighting again. And at one point, Morph turns into an animal, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've seen him turn into a non-human at this point.
Yeah.
And he turns into a Black Panther.
Yeah, it's cool.
Which is a nice little, like... In an episode where the X-Men go to Africa, we see two Black Panthers. In an earlier scene, when we see Mijinari growing up in a flashback, he's outrunning a Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
And now Morph is turning into one and fighting Wolverine.
In South America. As a Black Panther.
Yeah. And yeah. It's kind of... This is another thing where it's kind of a shame that the Marvel Cinematic Universe isn't as united as it should be, because Black Panther, the character,
mm-hmm.
actually has a lot of dealings with the X-Men.
Yeah.
And mutants in general. Most prominently, at some point, he marries Storm, and they make quite the power couple.
Yeah.
I think they later get divorced or something. Like, I don't know what happens. But
that's a bummer.
Yeah, no, that's a bummer. But, like, Black Panther is, like he's really steeped in a lot of X-Men lore.
Mm-hmm.
And the show, I think, is... I don't know if they're not necessarily directly hinting at it, but it's enough of a reference point.
That might have just been,
point.
Like, an accident.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, they could have shown, like, a cheetah... Or
well, right after
a lion.
The Black Panther, they do show a rhino, so...
They do, but they show two Black Panthers in this episode. That's my only point. That right. can't... To me, that's, like, a little bit more of a wink-wink that, like, hey, mm-hmm. we're Marvel, this Black Panther's out there, too.
I'm not sure about
okay,
that.
Fine. All right, whatever. I'm just excited for the Black Panther movie. All right, so that's what's going on. So, and then, you know, Morph turns into a rhino, so we see Wolverine have to fight a rhino. Then he turns into Sabretooth. And basically what happens is Morph's, like, says, like, listen, I'm tired of messing around with you right now. I need to, like, fix myself on my own, or I need to be by myself a while.
Right.
And Wolverine has enough presence of mind to honor this. He's like, all right.
His emotional intelligence is growing.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and... And so that's pretty much what's going on with Wolverine, and it's a nice little bookend to our reintroduction to Morph,
yeah.
who has been resurrected.
Right.
And back to the main plot line of the Shadow King, I just want to mention that whoever does the Shadow King's voice, spot on.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And the modulation they put in that voice, it's almost like the same of what his voice sounds like on Legion.
Well, the people who like are making Legion probably watched this cartoon well, too. Maybe, no?
I don't know. We can't jump to that. Okay, we can't leap to that. But like that's just like it's either a coincidence or you're right. Like they either watch a show.
It might have been source material for right. them, you know?
It's another it might be another example of the expanded X like movie television universe ripping off this cartoon
yeah.
as like research.
Yeah.
But like the Shadow
well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean it's spot on, so
right. I mean it's a great voice. It's yeah. so it's like really scary. It's like a demented clown kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like Stephen King-esque. And then, okay, what else do we got going on here? And then, like, we see the Shadow King in his non, like, possessed form. He's, like, this, like, huge metallic monster. Almost like in, like, Shogun armor with glowing red eyes.
Right.
And that's when he's in the astral plane. In the physical world, he's yeah. like a floating, dismembered ghost head.
Storm's flashback. That's how right. she remembers him when she was a child. But, yeah now we don't see him take that form. He's
right.
like
he's like a ghost. Like a ghost head.
Yeah.
Like a flying, like...
cloud sort of
lioness
thing.
Ghost cloud. Yeah. Anyway, and so the plot to stop... the Shadow King, well, the first thing Storm does is when she's possessed, she kind of still has control. Mm-hmm. So she flies up into the upper stratosphere to, like, choke herself.
She essentially tries to commit suicide, right. figuring that if she dies, the Shadow King also dies up there or something.
Which gives you a hint of how powerful and dangerous the Shadow King is, that Storm automatically thinks, I might have to die to like, win this battle.
Right.
And she doesn't even question it.
Right. So she doesn't die. She passes out. The Shadow
King catches her.
Does leave her body, but, like, you know, she revives. She's okay.
Right. And then Mishnari mentions that, like, oh, I've noticed the tear in the astral plane, which is shrinking in the mountain. I'm going to run to it and try to trap him in there.
Right.
And Rogue's like, no, it's too big of a risk. You're not going to make it. He's like, no, I'm fast enough. And it's a cool scene. He runs, like, as fast as he can. You know,
the Shadow King is, like, right on his heels.
Right.
This, like, menacing cloud.
Yeah.
It's actually, like,
so it's almost like, you wonder, it's like, is Mishnari moving faster than the power of thought? Because it's like, how is it, what speed is the Shadow King limited by in his astral form?
Right.
You know, so that's, like, so Mishnari's fast. So he escapes into the astral realm. We see it a little bit.
Which is
bit.
Really cool. It's like a real psychedelic vision.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we see in great, you know, 4K 3D beauty in the Doctor Strange movie.
Right.
You know, he travels to the astral plane or to the, you know, other dimensions of
right.
consciousness.
Which, don't get me wrong, in the Doctor Strange movie, that stuff is amazing.
I love that.
I really thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
That movie, yeah.
But, like... the cartoon version of it is, like, a different flavor, but, like, also really, really cool, in my opinion.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you know? Yeah. Like, and we'll see more of these, like, fantastic, like, alternate dimensions as we go forward in future
yeah.
plot lines. It gets better and better. Mm-hmm. I think they really, like... they really go over the top in, like, capturing abstract, like, realities.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, the plan works. Mishnari just barely gets pulled out of the astral plane right when the rift closes. Shadow mm-hmm. King is trapped again.
Super suspenseful.
The day is saved, which is really lucky for the X-Men, because they don't have... Xavier's nowhere to be found.
Right, they don't have reinforcements. It's just Storm and Rogue and Mishnari.
Right,
now.
Right. Mishnari we're not really going to see again... actually, we do see him again. He comes back.
Yeah.
In some cameos.
Yeah.
So, but he's not, like, he doesn't join the X-Men, although he would be useful.
Yeah, totally.
Much like Quicksilver would have been useful in the X-Men movies, but they just kind of leave him to the side at certain points.
Right.
Because it's like he's too powerful or something. So Mishnari, you know, it's a happy day. Storm and Rogue fly away. The whole village waves at them. You know, justice is restored in the little village there in Tanzania. But speaking of Professor X, Magneto... we see the last we saw them, they were getting trapped in an avalanche, and now we see what happens after that avalanche.
Right.
They've, like, one thing, Professor X can walk.
Yeah, they dig their way out of the avalanche. We see that. They're okay.
They're unharmed. Professor X can walk, but they've lost their powers.
Mm-hmm.
But even more crazy than that, they've discovered a tropical rainforest in the middle of Antarctica, which, again, Professor X, he pronounces in that weird way.
He's just enunciating.
Whatever. we disagree on this very harshly. He's in Antarctica, uh-huh. And it's the Savage Land. It's the famous Savage Land from X-Men lore.
Right.
And the Savage Land is this mythical place in Antarctica where, like, for some reason, it's, like, prehistoric times. There's dinosaurs. It's 90 degrees. There's, like... jungle people,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's there's people flying on pterodactyls attacking them.
Yep.
And it's all at the behest of Mr. Sinister, who, it was his plan to get Morph to drive them there.
Right.
And, you know, I thought, before we jump into some other stuff, I thought it was funny how Professor X, he gets the use of his legs, and he automatically establishes himself as a great athlete.
Yeah, like, I know. I was thinking that too. I was like, the second that he gets his legs, he can just like run at top speed. He like dives into the river.
But yeah, to save Magneto's life. I mean,
like he's swimming full force and like, yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah. And you know, and like we said, it's all part of the overarching plot of season two relating to Mr. Sinister.
Mm-hmm.
So
last time we were speculating without, like, a whole lot of information. We knew that Mr. Sinister was a geneticist of some kind, making, right. like, weird, creepy creatures. But a lot of you guys did actually write in on the Facebook group, so thanks for that. Tom filled us in and said that he was a human geneticist who was a colleague of Xavier's grandfather and recruited by Apocalypse to engineer an army of super strong mutants. And he gives us some more details than that, but I'll stop reading there. If you're interested, there's some spoilers coming up here, so you can check it out on the Facebook group yourself. Thanks, Tom, for that info.
The Nasty Boys. That was driving me crazy that I couldn't remember their name last week, because I know who the Nasty Boys are. And then he even posted an image of them from like the Marvel X-Men trading card series, of which I had every playing card too, so thanks, Tom, for sharing that image as well. And the conversation goes on. I want to thank PJ, Arthur, Dave, and others who have been contributing to the Facebook group in the past week. It's really getting lively in there, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So if you like what you've been listening to and would like to join the conversation as well, then please look us up on Facebook. It's X-Men TAS Podcast. Just join the group. Join on in. And if you like our podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate mm-hmm. us 5 stars if you like it. Tell your friends. And
write a review on iTunes. That's always helpful.
Oh, yeah.
And follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. And that's all we got for all the housekeeping stuff. I want to also remind people that we'll be back again next week for the episode Red Dawn,
in which the X-Men do a lot more globe traveling.
Yes. This time we'll be reunited with a few of our friends who we've met previously, including Colossus.
Maybe it'll turn out there are more than 4 corners to the Earth.
Yes, maybe. We'll go to the 5th corner of the Earth. Yeah, so stay tuned for that, and that's all I got to say.
All right. Good night.
Good night.